Will the House please come to order? The Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson.
Here.
Bagby.
Here.
Barbuto.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Flickrey.
Here.
Bonner.
Here.
Brechtel.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Buchanan.
Here.
Byrd.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Carson.
Here.
Childers.
Here.
Cohey.
Here.
Connolly.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Davison.
Here.
Dirks. Dirks, Edmonds, Esquivel, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan excused, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Illaway, Yagi, Jorgensen, Kimball, Landon, Lockhart, Lubno, Madden, McKim, McComey, Miller, Millen, Moniz, Patton, Peasley, Pedersen, Peterson, Philp excused, Korberg, Roscoe, Simlick, Shepperson, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker, Dirks, 58 present, 2 excused.
Prayer today is given by Reverend Dr. Jason Harshberger, representing United Presbyterian Church in Laramie. Reverend Harshberger.
My sisters and brothers, greetings. And may the grace and peace of our Lord Jesus Christ be with us all. Let us pray. Holy and gracious God, you are the creator of the world and the author of our lives. You are the one who spins the stars and the one who knit us together in our mother's womb. You are our God, and as we gather today, we give you thanks for the opportunities that are set before us. Over these past few days, Lord, we have experienced a wonderful warm-up in the weather, one that plants seeds of hope in us that spring and beautiful weather are not that far away. As we bask in this glow and warmth, we look ahead at what is to come. Help us to remember that we are always a people of hope. Plant seeds of hope in us, O Lord, that one day your peace will rule on this earth. The lion will lay with the lamb, that swords will be beaten into plowshares. And until that day comes, help us to work for peace. Help us to work for justice. Help us to work for those who are oppressed, those who are marginalized, those who are forgotten. Not just in our own backyards, but for those around the world. Plant seeds of hope in those who are in the midst of struggle and conflict. Be with those who have lost everything due to wars and attacks and invasions. Be with all those who fight for their beliefs, their passions, and their countries. Be with all those who serve in harm's way. Keep them safe and bless their families and loved ones. Plant seeds of hope in those who are recovering from the recent natural disasters around our world. Be with the people of Haiti and the people of Chile. Be with them as they struggle and seek to rebuild. And plant in us seeds of hope, O Lord, to make a difference in whatever way we can. Plant in us seeds of hope, O Lord, that we might remember that this is not a season of budgets and debates, but rather this is a season of journeying with you in all areas, arenas, and facets of our lives. And as we embrace these seeds of hope, help us to have our ears opened, our eyes opened, and our hearts opened to you, our hope, our faith, our God. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Journal Committee Report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of March 1st, 2010 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Moniz, Representative Barbudo.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, you may have privilege over the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today I'm happy to present the Doctor of the Day, but before I do, I'd like to say that any modicum of success that I've ever had or anything that's good and decent about me that maybe you think about me or anything comes largely in part from my mother, and I'm happy to have her here today as our doctor of the day, Dr. Kay Buchanan.
Welcome, Dr. Buchanan. Nice to have you here today. Today is the last day for the clerical assistants to work this session. We wish to thank them and acknowledge their great organization of our desks and our lives sometimes. They have made it easier for us to be on task with the mounds of paper that fill our desks. Doris Osiki has chosen to retire this year after 10 years of service in the House. Doris has worked as page, messenger, and clerical assistants. Thank you, Doris, for your loyalty and dedication. The clerical assistants are Sally Allen, Brenda Arzuda, Pat Camillo, Barb Costa, Lynn Davis, Shirley Dickman, Teresa Howes, Ellen Cubb, Karen Lippincott, Doris Losicki, Yvonne Quintal, and Peggy Smithson. Thank you very much, ladies, for all your hard work. I know with some of us it is an extreme challenge to organize this. Today we are also honoring the dedication and the dedicated service of Sue Ann Schaefer, our staff supervisor, upon her retirement. Sue Ann, would you like to come on out, please? Thank you. Sue Ann, I have a resolution that I would like to read first. This is a House resolution providing for recognition of Sue Ann Schaefer's service to the Wyoming legislature in celebration of her many years of service to the state of Wyoming, and expressing the deepest appreciation of the Wyoming House of Representatives for her contributions to this institution. Be it resolved by the House of Representatives of the 60th Legislature of the State of Wyoming, whereas Sue Ann began her career in the House of Representatives in 1985 as the Secretary for the Mines and Minerals Committee, and whereas the following year she served as Secretary for the Judiciary Committee before becoming the Joint Appropriations Committee's Secretary, a position she held for 10 years beginning in 1987. Whereas Sue Ann continued to work her way up the ranks within the House staff, serving as assistant staff supervisor from 1998 to 2000, and then was named staff supervisor beginning in 2001. And whereas Sue Ann's heartfelt passion for the legislative process was evident from day one, with her employment application stating, "I have always been fascinated with the legislative process and would consider it a privilege to be involved in that process." And whereas Sue Ann's grandfather, Edwin Bailey, served Albany County in the House of Representatives in 1943, making her no stranger to the legislative process. And whereas Sue Ann sets an example of class, elegance, and dignity with her creative nature, providing the House staff with stimulating, exciting, and innovative in-services and programs for the staff. And whereas as staff supervisor, she has shown a true interest in the human spirit and manages the staff by empowering people and treating them with respect through her proven leadership that is tactful, gentle, and sincere. And whereas one of Sue Ann's greatest accomplishments came when she transferred the small committee rooms off the third floor gallery into committee chairman offices, allowing all House committees to meet in the larger, more comfortable, eloquent, spacious rooms in the third floor lobby. I ad-libbed there a little bit. And whereas Sue Ann publishes the weekly Turtle Times newsletter that provides staff and the representatives with timely information and interesting features related to the legislature, as well as historic facts about the Capitol, Wyoming, and the legislature. And whereas Sue Ann believes the best part of working in the House of Representatives has been the vitality of the staff and the representatives, as well as learning the legislative process over the years. And whereas Sue Ann has been a true Wyoming woman since her upbringing in Albany County and continues to enjoy spending time at her family's ranch. And whereas Sue Ann's motto in life is that the little things count and is the reason she is known by her colleagues for paying close attention to detail. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the members of the House of Representatives of the State of Wyoming that the members of the Wyoming House of Representatives sincerely thank Sue Ann for her dedicated service to the legislative institution and especially for her kindness and composure in carrying out her staff responsibilities. Number two, that after 26 years of working for Wyoming's legislative branch of government, may she enjoy just as many years of leisure. We wish her well as she begins a new chapter in her life when she will officially join the ranks of the retired, spending her hours at the ranch, enjoying time with her grandchildren, Bailey and Hannah, spoiling her dogs, Louie and Daisy, and as always, sharing her creative talents with the various community organizations that benefit from her involvement and fine attention to detail. Section 3, that this resolution be transmitted to Sue Ann Schaefer, so that she may know the tremendous impact she has had on Wyoming's legislative branch of government, and that she may feel pride in her legacy of public service to the Wyoming legislature and the state of Wyoming. Signed this first day of March to yesterday. Thank you, Sue Ann, so much. And we do have a gift for you. Sue Ann, we are pleased to allow you privilege of the floor.
Thank you so much, Mr. Speaker, for allowing me privilege of the floor. Mr. Speaker and members of the body, Madam Chief Clerk, members of the staff, and visitors in the gallery, thank you so much for this opportunity to speak before you. It's truly an honor and boggles my mind. The resolution was really something, and it's sort of hard to keep the tears from flowing. However, I am maintaining, but I want to thank all of you, and I'd like to read to you what it says on the side here. It says, Sue Ann Schaefer, 1985-2010, in appreciation for your years of dedication and tireless service to the House of Representatives, might I tell you that it has been my privilege to work in the House of Representatives. And I have two sets of thanks to give this morning. One to the staff for being such a wonderful staff. And they gave me the most delightful retirement party on Sunday night. It was so full of fine details and such good humor. It meant so it meant so much to myself and to my family. And then one other thank you I want to give, and that's to each one of you for serving on this floor. We, the staff, know how hard you work, and we appreciate the time that you spend here during the session and during the off session, the interim, with all your committee work, and with all the money that comes out of your pocket to run every 2 years. We applaud you for representing our state, and we thank you. Now, it's been my privilege and my pleasure to work down here, and I know that I am stepping into a new passage of my life with new horizons, and I do so with vigor, but I want you all to know I'm always going to miss you, and I'm always going to be out there cheering for the House of Representatives. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Chairman Berger, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have privilege of the floor? I would like to introduce my young friend, Miss Ava Elizabeth Taylor, in the South Gallery. She came to visit all of us today at the Capitol. I like her parents, too, Sean and Aaron, but Ava is a special little girl, and she plays a mean game of sorry. Ava, are you going to wave at everybody?
I can see you, Ava. I can see you. Welcome. Oh, there she is. Welcome to the House of Representatives. Tell your parents they do a pretty good job, too. Any other announcements? We are at that order of business of bills on second reading. Excuse me one second. People have been busy. The first bill for consideration is Senate File 7.
Senate File 7, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to rangeland health assessments.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 7. And it's a simple thing. It just refers to the need to kind of get some feedback on the effectiveness and the experience of this new program. As you know, yesterday, we appropriated through these bills, the next one, and a couple of others, corpulent amounts of money that I didn't even know we had. And We don't know at this point. We know that we think that there's going to be a lot of people that will benefit from it or will be able to use it. But we don't know much about it at this point. And, you know, I guess at this point, what the amendment calls for, kind of a catch-up and a recording of what the first year's experience was, this would help the Ag Committee and would also have helped the Appropriations Committee as far as commitments to future budgets, you know, whether these amounts will warrant going into the standard budget 2 years from now or whether they'll go into an exception budget or just what it is. So that's all it is. It's not an uncommon thing to put this in new programs so we have some accounting of what that first year's experience is. We don't know, you know, the amount of money is in this bill and the next one is almost $1 million. And I just think when you got a new program in a period where we have tight finances, we've got to be responsible and see what the first year's experience looks like. So that's all it is, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Chairman Semlett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members of the House. There's aspects of this proposed amendment to Senate File 7 that I think conceptually are good. There's a couple details within the amendment that we would push back just a little bit on and perhaps work with the sponsors of this amendment on a third reading amendment to look at two different portions of the amendment that I will refer to now, and that is the no later than July 1st, 2011. As we get this program rolled out, I would question whether we would have much information to report at that time. So we might visit with them with respect to that. And the other one is on line 11 of the amendment. The report shall also identify the entities benefiting from the activities. I'm not sure that benefiting is the operative word here. So while we do believe that it is of interest to the stewardship of any new program to have a mechanism by which we can evaluate how well the program is working, I think we want to be somewhat mindful about the date and also about maybe the words that we use to describe how the program is supposedly to benefit or to serve. So I would ask that with some caution, if you want to go ahead and support this amendment, that's fine. We'll work with the sponsors, from my perspective anyway, and try to maybe bring a third reading amendment if we can agree upon some language and maybe a reassessment of that date. So some caution, third reading amendment I think would make it better, and we will work with the sponsors to do that.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment, ladies and gentlemen, what happens when we start these new programs that are, of course, tied to the funding? And we need some mechanism, a matrix, if you will allow us in Appropriations Committee as well as the Standing Committee that has authority here to make a decision based on information as to the merits and benefits of this new program that we're setting up and whether it does warrant moving forward. So this amendment merely tries to tackle that issue and provide these committees with some good information that we can make sound decisions on that we can then present to the body in a budget bill.
Representative Dan Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to go ahead and ask you to resist this amendment. We do want good data on this, but with the date being July 1st, 2011, how this program is going to be implemented, it goes into effect this summer. They're going to take a while to get all the rules and regs and the black ink signed, and it'll actually start next spring. The growing season in Wyoming starts, you know, March if you're lucky, usually April or May. But by July 1st, 2011, next summer, we're not going to have any good data to come back and say how it worked. We're not going to have any of the cooperating MOUs in place. We're not going to have a long-term study on the grassland of the effects of this bill and what we help, because there just won't be measurable effects yet. So to push back a little more, I'd just say vote no on this now. We can bring a third reading amendment to make it effective a year down the road and to talk about the rest of the amendment. But I just don't think it's achievable to ask for a study of the effectiveness of this program when we're really not going to start until the spring of 2011 anyway. Thank you.
Madam Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I also urge the body to vote against this amendment. I think my good colleague from Senate District 1 definitely indicate, or House District 1 indicated a willingness to work with the sponsors of this amendment, but it seems to me that to pass this amendment and then have to come back and fix it again on third reading is probably not a good use of our time. So on and against this amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? For their second time, prior to the sponsor? Representative Madden is the sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, the first year, you know, I guess one of the issues was, why did you pick the middle of 2011? If you pick the middle of 2012, that's too late. I mean, you're not going to be able to provide any useful information to the Appropriations Committee or the Ag Committee as to the legitimacy of the program. And, you know, maybe the benefits haven't all been laid out and aren't extremely measurable at the middle of 2011, but there ought to be some kind of a progress report or where they're at and how things are proceeding. I mean, I just don't see how you can take almost, what is this, about about 388,000 or something like that, and just say, well, we're just not going to do this and worry about it until two budget cycles from now. I think in these new programs, it's very commonplace to have this kind of a requirement, and I'd urge your support.
We are voting on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 7. All those in favor say aye. All opposed, no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 1 has failed. Senate File 7 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 13.
Senate File 13, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to economic analysis.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 13. Ladies and gentlemen, when you look at page 2 of the bill, lines 5 through 11, and remember, this bill is saying that the Department of A&I, Division of Economic Analysis, shall do these things. And in the existing language, it says that they will establish uniform criteria for certain things related to uses of and economic impacts to state and federal surface and mineral lands. That language really bothered me, because I don't think that's necessarily the whole impact that they should consider. It's not just to the land itself. It's the economic impacts related to that use. So I'm proposing to rewrite Romanet 7. And you can see how it reads, related to the economic and socioeconomic impacts from uses of state and federal surface and mineral lands, including but not limited to those things. And it also includes not just economic on line 8 of the amendment, but and socioeconomic impacts, which I think is important in any analysis of state or federal land policy management. So it adds in socioeconomic in different parts of the bill. And in the Zwanitzer amendment yesterday, it just takes out the word economic, so it says any data, and it brings in economic, socioeconomic, whatever it may be. I I would offer that this strengthens the bill and would be happy to ask or answer any questions. Thank you.
Chairman Semlick.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think this is a good clarification of that Section 7, and it's a part of the NEPA process during the scoping aspect of that evaluation to look at social, economic, besides the contemplation that it be a foregone conclusion that they would do that, I think adding these words in this section is fine, and we consider it to be a friendly amendment and ask for your support.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman Childers.
Well, Madam Majority Whip, I support the amendment, but the concern that I've got when I read this before and this morning, it says from uses of state and federal surface. And since it's involved in the federal land management or federal management process for NEPA documents, why would we put state in there? And then the other thing, you do say federal surface and mineral. So you catch the mineral estate and all the federal surface, but there's really no need to add the state, in my opinion. But perhaps the good speaker could say maybe we could amend out state and, if it's receptive to the whoever.
Anyone else for their first time? A Representative Dan Zwanitzer.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I just have a question, I guess, on social economic impacts. I know it's under NEPA and scoping. In my mind, economic is very, I guess, easier to quantify, to get hard data. And socioeconomic is one of those words that can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So maybe just some clarification on what some of these socioeconomic impacts would be. I think I support it, but I just think there's a little fuzzy room there on how this is going to work and what we're going to make economic analysis do. Thanks.
For their first time, Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Speaker. On and in support of the amendment and the bill, I think this addition clarifies and expands to a degree what we need in the economic analysis of these kinds of projects as they affect, or issues as they affect our state. And one of the things we've learned is that we need to involve the right people in this, and I think this amendment and this bill do that. So I urge your support of the amendment and the bill.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the bringer of the amendment. When we are going to be looking at development of agriculture, will we be doing a level of detail that may not be done in the NEPA process? And what I'm referring to is categorical exclusion, which would hope to maintain when we look at renewing grazing leases. And I guess the question, would we be doing an analysis in greater detail that is not warranted?
Anyone else for their first time? For their second time, prior to the sponsor? Chairman Semlick? No? Oh, sorry. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. With regard to the first question about state, the word state in there, that's in the original language in the bill, page 2, line 8. In Senate File 31, the FINERPA account bill, that one relates to federal surface or federal lands. But when you look at the language under FINERPA, it also talks. I don't know why we shouldn't expand that to allow counties to benefit from helping analyze the impacts of state land planning also. And that same theory then carries over into what you're doing with this bill by authorizing the Division of Economic Analysis to establish these uniform criteria. Why would we leave that out? Why not analyze some of those impacts for counties? Because that's what it's for. Secondly, why socioeconomic? Why not include the broader definition? Socioeconomic, you can look it up and see what the definition is. It's economic, but it also goes beyond that to include recreation opportunities. That can be quantified on an economic basis for the owner of whoever owns that entity that might where you might be recreating, like a ski area. But what does it actually do to the area in a larger scope? I know it's squishy, and I didn't, you know, I don't know whoever invented the term, but I think it ought to be as broad as possible. And because that's what the federal land management people say to us, at least in Park County, is, you know, show us the socioeconomic data. Well, we'll show you economic data and hopefully be able to show you socioeconomic data if we can quantify it well enough. But I think it ought to be included. The I'm not sure I understood the last question about the categorical exclusions. I don't know how the original language in the bill would not allow that, and this amendment would. You know, maybe you could talk to me some more about that. But what this bill does is set up the uniform criteria. It allows the utilization of a nationally recognized model. Then the collecting, compiling, analyzing, maintaining, updating, reporting, and then on page 3, and it says the division shall supervise and coordinate statistical information or research programs conducted on behalf of counties. Well, what if the county doesn't want that? What if the county wants to use their own analysis? I think There'll probably be a third reading amendment that touches on this issue, but the language in the bill should be as broad as possible because it's mandatory the way it's written. And it doesn't say a county can't opt out of being supervised by ANI. And so we'll have some more discussion on that. But back to the point of the amendment, I think it goes directly to the economic and socioeconomic impacts from uses of state and federal surface and mineral lands, and not specifically just to the land. What is the impact to the land, which is what the bill says?
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate file number 13, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 13 has been adopted. There is. Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate file 13. And I do this recognizing that if you didn't want a review of the progress and the services transmitted with the previous bill, you probably don't want it in this one either. But the reasoning is the same. We've got a new program. We don't know what lies ahead. We don't know who is going to receive, it's not so important to know who, but we don't know the number of entities that are going to be receiving the service, who's going to make use of it. And we don't know what the benefits of it are, and I just think that after it's been in existence for a year that the Appropriations Committee and the Ag Committee would want to look at this before it's budget time again. So I recommend you vote for it, and we'll see what happens.
Chairman Semlick.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. With regard to the reporting requirements, I'm not going to stand in front of this body and say that there should be some cloak of secrecy about what new programs do. I support that. There will be, again, as with the previous amendment, some concern about the date. But, ladies and gentlemen, I am more concerned about the language on the amendment on line 14. The report should also identify the entities benefiting. This refers back to the Department of A&I, and I would reference language in the bill, which is kind of the empowering authority within the bill, on page 2, line 17, where the responsibility of the Department of A&I will be to collect, compile, analyze, maintain, update, report, distribute, and consolidate into a digest digest form economic data described in paragraph above. I think what we're asking in this amendment is a reporting requirement on the Department of A&I when, in fact, the enacting language within the bill really doesn't allow them or require them to do that. So while we might want to consider a reporting requirement, I think it would be inappropriate to ask that from the Department of A&I, that we would look at if at some other entity to provide that, and perhaps it would be, you know, a local government or some other place. So with the problems that I see in the two different areas of this amendment, again, I would support reporting. I'm just not sure that we have got the language in this amendment for the right agency to do that. So at this point, members of the House, I would ask you to resist this amendment.
For your first time, Representative Dan Zwanitzer.
I'm just going to urge you to vote no on the amendment, Madam Chair. Basically, the first part, July 1st, 2011, by September, maybe October the latest, the Appropriations Committee is going to get all this information when EA comes before them to tell them how the program's going. I don't know what 3 months and another report and a bunch of paperwork is gonna do to, I don't know, shed more light on the program than appropriations can already do with. I guess my other concern is the word benefiting. This bill set up for economic analysis to do an unbiased look at a county, and it may in fact not benefit that county in their position. And so the wording on line 15, entities benefiting, and on 16, the description of the benefits, I just don't think that fits in line with the bill and doesn't really bode well for a reporting requirement that we can't do. So I'd ask you to resist the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Part of the testimony that we heard from the department in regards to the regional economic modeling system is that it is going to take them at least a year just to collect and get the baseline data in the model. So at the point that this amendment would be asking for the first report, they may not even have the system fully in place yet. Once that's fully in place, however, we can look forward to annual updates that can adjust to whatever circumstances we're actually seeing on the ground. So while I fully support the idea that we need to have some review and some reporting and some accountability and transparency, I think here it's the timing issue.
Anyone else for their first time? For their second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll just say that I disagree. I think that there's a value to information. And if you have a new program like this, and we're talking about whether we keep it going or not, and we've got a tight budget, we need to know that. The best way to keep it going is just not to have any progress report or any documented information on who's receiving the services, and that's about all there is. Thank you.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 13, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 13 has failed. Senate File 13 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 20.
Senate File 20, introduced by Senator Esquivel, an act relating to tax-based communications prohibited while driving.
Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 20. Ladies and gentlemen, I listened carefully to the discussion yesterday, and I heard loud and clear that what we need is a culture change. And I agree, that is what we need. And we had the same conversation, I don't know how many years ago, about seat belts. It's not about the size of the hammer. It's about education. It's about awareness. And look at the success that we've had with our seatbelt law. Right now, almost everybody buckles up. Almost everybody. There is a small percentage that doesn't, and that's going to be the case no matter what you do. Whether you have a $10,000 fine or not, there's going to be the small percentage that doesn't buckle up. And that's what this amendment is trying to do. It's trying to mirror what we've done with our seatbelt law. It's making the texting while driving a secondary offense. I believe that this approach will work. My other concern with the way the bill is written is the enforcement. And that question was never answered yesterday. How is a police officer going to know if you're dialing a number or if you're texting? If they do pull you over, do they have the right to look at your phone or not? Those are big questions for me. It's a power issue as far as the police is concerned. So what exactly is just cause to look at your phone? So that's why, again, I go back to the education and awareness. It works. It's proven to work. It's worked with seatbelts, and it will work with this. So I ask for your favorable consideration of this amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, literally it has pulled the teeth out of the bill. Why would you put something into law that people simply could scoff at? I recognize the conversation about seat belts, and I'm not sure it's the secondary law that we have that have required people to put seat belts on. I believe it is, again, culture and an attitudinal shift of the people of Wyoming. With a bill like this, with absolutely zero teeth or zero effect to it, is that going to change culture in any way? That the question is up to you.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Rising on in the support of the amendment, I think for those of us that had major heartburn with this bill, this amendment takes it in the right direction by trying to spread the awareness that we're aware of the issue of distracted driving and that this issue of texting is a major contributor to that. I can support the bill with this amendment, and I think it's a point of compromise, and I appreciate the sponsor of the amendment for bringing it today.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I urge you to vote against this amendment, and I don't know if I got my point fully made yesterday, but let me tell you, there's a lot in airplanes about looking inside the cockpit and looking outside the cockpit. And it's not just looking. Do you see what you're looking at? And I can just tell you from experience, that business of looking inside and then looking outside, whether it's breaking out at minimums, whether it's looking for traffic,
You can look inside a cockpit. You can look out, and unless you've really trained yourself to do so, when you look out, your eyes run out to infinity. And you will not see an airplane that's between you and infinity. You'll look right past it. And I just know from those kind of experiences that trying to text and drive on the highway is too dangerous to even attempt. Without a lot of training, with somebody catching your mistakes until you finally learn how to do it. And then it takes constant activity to maintain proficiency. And if you don't, and we know in flying, that's the reason we say in flying, currency is a lot more important than total hours. I don't care if you've got 50,000 hours flying an airplane. If you haven't flown one for a year, you're not competent to fly that airplane without some practice and some backstopping. And so I just can't agree with this. It's just too dangerous to let people do it. We ought to just say, if you do it, it's a status offense. If you do it, you can be picked up and you're going to be fined for it. So on and against the amendment.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Just a question. Can I still text while driving an airplane?
Representative Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment. Ladies and gentlemen, when we're going to pass a law like this, there are too many unanswered questions as far as enforcement, as far as Fourth Amendment. And if this is going to be something that I can support anyway, I need to have this amendment. If you look at the seatbelt law, we've defeated it time and time again where somebody's come in and tried to make that a primary offense. And I'll make the same argument today. I don't want to get up early Sunday morning and I'm going to the store and I dial my phone to find out what I'm supposed to get from the grocery store and a police officer thinks I'm texting. I get pulled over. It's a waste of my time. I'm not texting. And the reason I make that argument, it's the same with seatbelts. We all know you shouldn't text and drive. You should wear your seatbelt. But look at the success of the seatbelt program. It is about education. The good sponsor is right. We don't need to be punitive, especially in the first year of making this illegal, because the fact of the matter is they're not going to be able to discern whether or not you're talking with the speakerphone function of your cell phone or you're dialing your cell phone. And that is very problematic. And the last thing I want to say is what I said yesterday is we still have careless driving on the books. If you're going down the road and you're swerving around regardless of the reason why, under that law, the police officer can pull you over. And if you're texting and that's what was causing it, you're going to get pulled over. Boom, primary offense. If you're doing something else that distracts you, you're going to get pulled over. It's a misdemeanor and it's punishable. So by adopting this amendment, you're not taking away all the tools, but you're taking a sensible step in the right direction without throwing the baby out with the bathwater, and that is, I don't want to be pulled over for doing something legal, and I don't want my phone to be searched to try and figure out if I was texting. It just goes too far. On and for the amendment.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Against the amendment, for the bill. A little over a year ago, there was a train crash in Southern California. The engineer was texting 7 seconds before impact. Killed 25 people. You cannot text while on a train, airplanes, I'm not so sure about. Thank you.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and in favor of the amendment, and the amendment is the only way that I would actually vote for this bill. Careless driving is when you text. Texting is careless. We already have a law in the book. The point was made yesterday several times. It's careless behavior. I know we've heard that this is a cultural shift here in the capital city. We did have the municipality pass a bill. I think we'll see a cultural shift. It's probably going to happen in a very small body of people, but there will be a cultural shift after the passing of that bill. I don't quite understand right now as it stands, and if we put this amendment in the bill, if I'm driving down the road and I'm texting and I'm between the lines and I stop at a stoplight and I put my cell phone down and an officer sees me, but I haven't been careless and I haven't been reckless, he can't stop me. Now, if I continue on down the road and I pick my cell phone back up and I'm texting and this is still in the bill and I'm swerving, I am careless driving and the officer can stop me. So this gives the officer some discretion. It also allows for the fact that I know we've heard the dear and drastic and horrific evils of texting, but it does so happen that once in a while you could send a text and not kill people. You could send a text and keep your car on the road. You can also yell at your children in the back. You can tell them to buckle their safety belt. You can eat a slice of pizza. It happens. I think officers need to have the discretion, and the only way I would vote for this bill is this amendment.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker is the sponsor of the infamous seatbelt law. It's been amended three times to get it to where we've got it. First, when we first got it, the only way we could get it through the Senate was say, well, if you're going to pull somebody over and write them for a seatbelt violation, you also have to write them for the violation you pull them over for. You couldn't pull them over and say, well, you know you were driving a little too fast, but I wish you would slow down, but I'm going to write you for not wearing your seatbelt. Three amendments later to that bill, we've got what we've got today. The fact is, education, you're correct with educating on this bill. Whether that bill passes without an amendment or with the amendment, it's public awareness that we're going to raise. The good chairman of transportation is correct. That literally guts the bill. The problem is with the bill is unless that bill contains something that says, I as a police officer have the right to take that phone and look and see if you were making a call or you were texting, it's not there. But we will raise the public awareness. So I am on and for the bill. I would not like to see it amended because I don't think it makes any difference. But please, ladies and gentlemen, do whatever it takes to bring this bill to raise that public awareness.
Representative Hales.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Most of you will remember the first week that we were here, there was the Cody Youth Group, and they had brought information and asked all of us to be sure that this bill did pass. The youth from 18 to probably 28 is the largest age group that is involved with the texting at this point. And as I listened to the debate this morning, we kept talking about what if we got pulled over? What if we were charged with texting? And I think our concern should be about this younger generation of kids and answer their concerns. Thank you.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A biennium ago, I served on transportation, and I remembered how much testimony we had regarding the effectiveness of Wyoming's seatbelt law and the problems that we were having with it. And it seems to me it was a budget item to spend a lot of money on advertising with regard to the use of seatbelts. And so it's being alluded to that if we make this bill similar to our seatbelt law, that it will be as effective as our seatbelt law. And so what I want to share with you are the facts that I just found now. These are from the year 2008, which were the most recent facts I could find. In Wyoming, wearing of seatbelts is 68%. Nationally, the average for seatbelt usage is 83%. An interesting fact is when they've gone and done spot checks around the state, and I'm sure you've read those articles, the usage of seatbelt use in Wyoming goes up because all of those people from out of state wear their seatbelts more than the residents of Wyoming. And so, but anyway, those are the facts. National, it's 83%. Wyoming, it's 68%. Mr. Speaker, I am against the amendment and for the bill.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Speaker, on and against the amendment, I was the bringer of the original seatbelt bill, and then the good representative Lander was more persistent than I was and brought it time after time. But I distinctly remember the discussions about the responsibility of driving and how Wyoming drivers are very responsible. However, let's get Mr. Speaker, be quiet. But you have to get into when you're texting, and admittedly you can't tell the difference between phoning and texting. They're going to have that difficulty. I understand that. But if you're texting, think about it. At 60 miles an hour, 88 feet per second, if my memory serves me, you go through one line of text, maybe a second, maybe 2 seconds, maybe even 3 seconds. But you're distracted when you're texting. Without a doubt, you're distracted when you're texting. Maybe you can multitask when you're on the phone and talking to somebody and you're looking out over, but when you're texting, your eyes are drawn towards that texting device. So, folks, texting is not being in a good position to pay attention to what you're doing. You're going to drift off, and in those few seconds, you may kill somebody. And my son prided himself in being able to be a multi-texter. He and his wife and my little four-year-old child that you've seen, a four-year-old grandchild that you've seen on that tie that I wear, they were only driving about 20 miles an hour, maybe 30, but he wasn't paying attention to what he was doing. He was multi-texting, and probably texting or checking his phone, and he slammed into a parked car, and he's lucky they lived. Maybe it doesn't have anything to do with it. Maybe it does. But this bill opens it wide open. So on and against the amendment and for the bill.
Thank you, Chairman Childers. I was letting Representative Lockhart know that I was sorry that he did not get privilege of the floor. He had some folks here who had to leave. Or are they here, Representative Lockhart? Okay, well, come on up, Representative Lockhart. I'm sorry to interrupt this, but we're going to give Representative Lockhart privilege of the floor. That's fine.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, for privilege of the floor. We do have with us a group of the best and brightest, some of the best and the brightest from Casper, Wyoming, and Kelly Walsh, and their teacher is Miss Allen, and our teacher Allen. If you would stand up and have your students stand up and be behind you, and on my left, your right, are these students, and they're studying U.S. history. And if there isn't a subject that you'd be interested in, like texting while driving, I would guess I'd be surprised. I suspect everyone up there is wondering, geez, I got my texting device in my pocket, or maybe they're in her hand. And these are the kinds of things that we try to work on down here for your benefit. It's very nice to have you here. Have a good time, and I hope you learn a lot, and some of you get into politics.
Welcome to the House of Representatives. All those in favor, raise your hand. Just kidding. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Against the amendment and for the bill. If I don't wear my seatbelt, I'm putting me in danger. But if I'm texting, I'm putting those people up there in danger. I think that's the biggest difference. You can't take away law enforcement's opportunity to protect and serve the public. Now, about the part about making a phone call as opposed to texting, the more you're only going to press 10 digits to make a phone call, and that phone will probably be up to your ear. Unless you're sending just a short message, you're probably punching a bunch of different buttons on that cell phone. And probably the biggest concern I have is when you're at a stoplight and the car in front of you doesn't go when the light turns green, and you look in your rearview mirror and the person behind you is not paying attention. And then you cause a multiple collision, and all because the person in front of you wasn't paying attention, to the light turning green and proceeding down the road. If there was a police officer at that intersection and he saw that, I think he should have the right to pull that person over because he just about caused an accident. He or she just about caused an accident. So it's law enforcement's duties to protect and serve the public. And this amendment would take away their opportunities to protect and serve the public. So against the amendment and for the bill.
Anyone else for their first time? Her second time, Chairman, excuse me, Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a quick question for the body and perhaps for the bringer of the amendment. There's still so many unanswered questions in this bill. So in my mind, this amendment, what it does, I have a hands-free device that I wear in my ears. If I'm touching my phone and doing something, I could very well be calling a phone number. The officer pulls me over. If this amendment is not in the bill, the officer pulls me over, and he asks for my phone, and I say no. What right did he have to pull me over? Is that probable cause? I was not swerving. I was not careless driving. He just happened to see me. No one has answered that question as of yet. No one has answered that question. So if I say no, you cannot have my phone, what happens? Where do we go from there?
Chairman Kopey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment and in favor of the bill. We heard the word compromise here, and in my opinion, this is hardly a compromise. It's nowhere near the center. As mentioned, it's literally an attempt to gut the bill. As far as a law enforcement officer being able to demand a device from you, a cell phone or something like that, I honestly can't say whether he or she could or could not. There's nothing in this bill that says they can. And again, it's personal property for them to ask for that. I really don't know. I'm sure it'll be tested one of these days. Imagine, if enacted, that you have a law on the books, one without any teeth whatsoever, to make our roadways more safe, and you can literally drive down the road and thumb your nose at any cop while you're texting. You could text the cop and thumb your nose at him. You can drive a vehicle and do all those things mentioned, eat pizza or comb your hair or put on lipstick for those of you that wear it. But I'm not sure that if I had a 16-year-old child that I would not put them in a corner and say, either give me the phone or promise to me that you will not use at least a texting device while you're driving down the road. That's just the way that I raised my kids. They're a little bit older than that now. But even at their age, I ask them if they text on the phone and they say no. And parents and children being what they are, I'm hopeful that they don't, but I have no way of checking it out. I'm not going to go demand their phone and look at it either. Year after year on this floor, we see a variety of bills to make our roadways more safe. We talk about it simply by considering legislation to hopefully implement into law what should be common sense. Should we be legislating common sense? Should we, and you've heard it here, but you haven't heard it, should we consider the nanny state in telling us what we must and must not do when we operate on a public roadway? We do it every year. I believe that when a horrific accident occurs in one of your communities, hopefully it won't be mine, that then we'll understand the reason for the bill.
Anyone else for their second time, part of the sponsor? Representative Shepherdson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the discussion. And I know everybody probably knows how they're going to vote, but I want to go through a couple of things that we've talked about here. My good friend from House District 35 tried to answer the question that another representative just asked that has not been answered yet. So we're going to pass a bill that we don't know what power the cops are going to have. We don't know what's going to happen until it's tested. That's not good enough for me. I want to know the consequences of a bill before we pass it. We talk about unintended consequences, but on this one, we don't even know the direct consequences. And this bill is going to affect the most people of almost any bill that we're talking about, but we don't know the consequences. We're not taking the teeth out of this bill. It's not how big of a hammer you have. It's about education. It's about awareness. Look at smoking. Look at seat belts. It works. The good representative from House District 27 talked about statistics and how Wyoming is lagging behind the nation. I don't know what to say to that. I don't know what statistics she is using. But what I know is everybody I talk to, everybody I know, buckles their seatbelt. Almost everybody. Even when we're bouncing around in the cow pasture, we buckle our seatbelt, mostly to keep your head from bouncing off the roof. But you buckle your seatbelt. Most of the discussion that we had here today was about whether texting and driving or texting and using an airplane or texting and using a train is safe. That's not what we're talking about here. That's not what this amendment is about. We know that texting is dangerous, no matter what you're doing. If you're texting and walking down the sidewalk, I've fallen down on my face before. That's not what the discussion is about. The discussion and the policy question that we have is, how do we make our children aware that this is not safe to do? Do we have the cops pull over everyone going down the street and hammer them with tickets? Or do we educate and increase awareness? And I guess that's a policy decision that this body is going to have to make. When a young generation, 18 to 28, we heard about, gets pulled over and the cop says, "I want to look at your phone." I'm sorry, when I was 18 and I got pulled over, I was scared to death. Is that 18-year-old going to hand them their phone? Does the cop have the right to ask for their phone? Well, I guarantee you the 18-year-old is going to give them their phone. And I just don't know that the cop has the right to do that. We don't know that. Again, it's not about whether you can and cannot text while you're driving. It's about how we want to educate the population about this issue. And for me, it's not about pulling every person over and giving them a ticket. It's about increasing awareness in a positive and proactive way. I urge your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. We are voting on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 20. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. The amendment has failed. Senate File 20, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 22.
Senate File 22, introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to the National Guard State Active Duty Medical Expense Reimbursement.
Representative Stubson. Oh, excuse me. Representative Carson, is there anything I can do for you?
I just want to do a quick privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce the woman that took care of me after I fell off my skateboard, my mom, who came to visit us from Laramie today. If you guys please give her a round of applause.
Hey. Where is she? Hi, Mom. Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File number 22 and ask for your aye vote. This is intended to be a friendly amendment and to address some confusion in the language on page 2. And the problem I see is that you've got 2 sentences that say exactly contradicting things. If you look in the first sentence, it says that medical costs that are paid by the officer or enlisted man or on behalf of the officer or enlisted man are reimbursable. And then you go to the second sentence, and it says medical expenses paid by a third party are not. But you have a situation where any expenses paid on behalf of an officer or enlisted man are paid by a third party. So in one sentence you say they're reimbursed, and in one sentence you say they aren't. And so what this amendment does is seek to straighten out that language, and it just changes the first sentence to say if it's paid by the officer or enlisted man or by the Wyoming Military Department, then it is a reimbursable expense. If it's paid by a third party, it is not. And I think that eliminates some of the confusion that might arise as a result of the current language.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise also in support of the amendment when we presented this bill. Of course, there were two provisions of it. The concept here was to help the young people to have these various classifications of activation with the Guard. This does remove some of the conflicting thing. I certainly look on it as friendly and would encourage the body to vote aye.
For their first time, or second time. We are voting on second reading amendment number 1 of Senate File 22. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. Motion carries 4-0. Representative Lebnow. I was confused. Senate File 22 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 25.
Senate File 25, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to liens.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1. We were sort of in a hurry yesterday and wanted to back up a little bit and talk about this bill a little more in-depthly. We spent, this was a two-year project, actually it was a three-year project of the Judiciary Committee to get this bill done. We worked real hard to find compromise. There was a committee made up of people that work in liens, bankers and lawyers and material men, contractors, real estate agents, everybody was involved. And we came up with this bill, and then it gets to the Senate, it gets over here, and suddenly some of the wheels are starting to fall off. So I wanted to back up and make sure we all understood sort of what some of the compromises were in this bill, and maybe, if we're going to open this bill up to a rewrite, I have quite a few areas I want to start rewriting then. But it was part of compromise that some of us backed down. Let me first talk about preliminary notice. Preliminary notice, the only best way to describe preliminary notice, it's gotcha. It's a gotcha thing. It doesn't help the homeowner. This has nothing to do with homeowners. It's a way to play gotcha with people. Because what you're supposed to do, you're supposed to send this preliminary notice to the owner of the property and say, by the way, the state legislature doesn't think you're very sophisticated and that you don't know about liens. Now, I don't know who's building a house that doesn't know about liens, but supposedly they're out there. And what banker didn't know that there was liens were possible on the home that he just lent money on? But supposedly this happens. So supposedly you send this preliminary notice, and you send the preliminary notice saying, hey, just so you know, in the future, if something goes wrong that you don't pay me, I can file a lien on this property. And that's great. You're giving notice to people of what the law is, and so then they can know what the law is. But here's the problem. If you don't get that preliminary notice to the person, you're out of luck. You don't get to file your lien. Even though you delivered the material or you did the work on it, but for some reason there was some screw-up and you didn't get the preliminary notice, and all the preliminary notice is saying, oh, by the way, I have the right to file a lien someday, but you never gave them that preliminary notice, you're out of luck. That's why it's called gotcha. It's gotcha in that, and this is why some people love it, because it gets rid of some of the lien holders right away. Some of the ones that weren't too sophisticated, meaning from the lien holder perspective, suddenly are out of the picture, and the other lien holders all jump up in priority. That was why in committee we talked seriously about taking preliminary notice out completely, just getting rid of preliminary notice. It doesn't serve any purpose other than to play this gotcha game. And it ends up hurting our contractors and our subcontractors and our material men. Now, here's what this amendment's dealing with. So we agreed, okay, we're going to put the preliminary notice in, but we did back off on some parts of it. How preliminary notice works today, you're honestly supposed to go out and nail with a hammer your preliminary notice to the structure.
That's how the law reads today. Nobody was doing that, and so people didn't know they were supposed to go nail their notice to the door. And it sounds so 17th century or something, nailing a notice to a door. People didn't know that. So, again, the gotcha game would come in, and people couldn't file their liens, and people didn't get paid. So we took that out. We said, no, you don't have to nail to the door anymore. Just provide the notice through mail or hand it to the person. Well, then the question came up, okay, with the contractor and the subcontractor, that makes sense because they're there. I mean, they're building on this building. They know where the building is. They know who the owner is. Hopefully the owner comes by to check on it. They can hand them the preliminary notice and say, here's the preliminary notice. I'm just giving you notice that if something goes wrong someday, I have the right to file a lien. But what about the material men? And this is where we had a lot of debate during the interim about material men. Material men are the people that deliver the product, but they may not have any idea where their material is going. Their material gets delivered maybe to the primary contractors, the general contractor's place of business. So how did the material man get his preliminary notice to the owner of the real estate so that he can have the right to file a lien when he doesn't get paid? So let's say he delivers some product, he doesn't get paid, and now he wants to put a lien on the property to be able to get his money back. He didn't deliver his preliminary notice. Again, gotcha. You don't get paid. So we're trying to find a way to help these material men. And you might want to ask, well, why are we trying to help these material men so much? The difficulty is a lot of these materials are coming from out of state. The discussion we had in committee was, will material men continue to ship things into our state if we adopt something where we again are telling material men, listen, if you don't get this to the right person, you're not going to have to actually be able to file a lien on this person. Is there the off chance that material men will stop delivering into the state of Wyoming? And for residential, I'm not too worried. It's the commercial aspect. Building of commercial buildings that material men from other states may not want to deal with Wyoming anymore if we don't have a means by which they can be treated fairly. So what we put into the bill was that, yes, you give it to the owner, contractor, subcontractor, or you can give it to the contractor, because contractor sees the homeowner all the time. So if you're the material man, you would drop off your product, and you'd hand him the bill. And at the bottom of your bill, just on the bill, you could actually put a little notice on there. By the way, here's your notice that if something goes wrong someday, I could file a lien, giving the preliminary notice. Then the contractor can then hand that to the real estate agent. That was the concept to help material men. Now, the other side of this argument now all of a sudden is that we have all these nefarious contractors all of a sudden in the state of Wyoming that suddenly are going to take these preliminary notices from the material men and stuff them in their pocket and never give it to the owner of the property. And I guess there could be that argument that we have all these nefarious contractors running around the state doing that. I just haven't seen that before, but supposedly it happens. So it comes down to a policy decision. Do you go on the one side that the material man's going to have to track down and hand it over to the owner of the property, or on the other side, do we make it a little bit easier for the material man and say, you know what, you just got to get it to the contractor, and then the contractor's going to give it to the owner? Either way we do this, there's some inconsistencies now in the bill. What this amendment's trying to do is put it back in on page 18, line 7, so it would say the contractor, subcontractor, and material man shall send written notice to the record owner or his agent. And what we're trying to put back in is who, for purposes of this section, includes the contractor. Now, if we don't put that back in, so if you vote against the amendment, that's fine. Again, it's just a policy decision. It's not going to end the world. But the problem is then now you have a conflict over on page 19. So either way we do it, we got to make sure that subsection 5 either gets taken out or stays in, depending on how you deal with this amendment. Because what subsection 5 says is the contractor shall forward to the owner any preliminary notice received from a subcontractor or material man. So if we don't do this amendment today, right now, we need to take 5 out. Otherwise, it's going to confuse people as to why the contractor's turning stuff over if we're not requiring them to be the agent. Again, to me, it's just a policy decision. You go both ways. I think it's good to put it back in because it helps material men. But I certainly see the argument on the other side that somehow there's these nefarious contractors running around stuffing them in their pocket and never handing it over to the homeowner or to the commercial building owner, either way. I just wanted to make sure we had that chance to talk about this one more time. And
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition to this amendment. Late in the day, while we didn't have an extensive discussion, we certainly had some discussion about the reasons why the risk should be placed on the people in the business. The material men, the subcontractors, the contractor are in the business of building things. They should, even if they're out-of-state companies, they're probably big out-of-state companies, it's their job to know the law in the states they operate and to take steps to protect their rights. But if we adopt this amendment, we're making the risk fall to the owner, and we're having the contractor act as their agent. And that's not really fair to the owner, especially when you're talking about a residential homeowner. It puts the owner at risk of paying twice. And we really don't need to put that burden on the owners of a project. That burden should be on the people in the business. And also, just as a cleanup matter with regard to 29A-112 Romanet 5, I do have a later amendment to remove that. And I think it's also important for the body to understand that this issue was debated extensively on the other side of the hall, and they thought they had it resolved. And I think through some confusion in our committee, frankly, we've reopened it again rather unintentionally. So I'd urge you to defeat the amendment, and we can continue to work on the cleanup provisions for this bill. Thank you.
Representative Lebno. No comment. Anyone else for their first time? For your second time? Chairman Gingrey.
I won't belabor the issue, but just if I was a material man, I just wouldn't do business in Wyoming. I think we're making it extremely difficult to do business in our state. I'd urge you to vote aye.
We are voting on second reading amendment number one of Senate File 25. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number one has failed. Representative Lebno.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number two to Senate File 25 and ask for your favorable consideration. Let's not compromise into bad law. There are some, I think, fairly dangerous and far-reaching provisions to this bill that we ought to talk about. Millions and millions of dollars rest on your vote on this bill today, not just for homeowners, but for commercial businesses as well. Generally, there are two situations in which a lien arises. One is when the owner overspends and runs out of money. The other is when the contractor is working on several projects and is spread too thin and steals money from one project to pay for another project, and there's not enough money to pay the subcontractors. And the question is, who does that? And up where I live, this is a huge part of my practice. We deal with owners who spend too much money, money they don't have, and we also deal with nefarious contractors, to use the good chairman's terms, all the time. And the consequences of this bill are going to be far-reaching, and so I'd like to discuss the amendments with you. On page 3, the amendment is, there's a sentence in there that says that the lien statement shall not be signed by the claimant's attorney. I believe that to be unnecessarily restrictive. If the claimant's attorney wants to subject themselves to the penalties later on for false swearing, then that's fine. But generally what happens is these folks come in right before the lien day runs, the attorney goes, holy cow, and goes out and does all of the title work necessary to find out who gets notices of liens, and then does the lien claimant. And oftentimes, the attorney has the best grasp of the facts of anyone. And so putting this unnecessary restriction in there just restricts lien claimants from their ability to claim a lien. Now, liens are a creature of statute, so the courts strictly construe our language here. And if you don't dot every I or cross every T, there's no leeway. It just doesn't happen. The lien doesn't happen, and your contractor or your materialman just doesn't get paid or loses their priority. The next amendment is on page 9, after the word real property, just to clarify, we insert the word fixtures, which are those things that are attached to the real property. I've litigated that issue about whether a fixture attaches or not, and so that was just important as a result of that litigation. The next amendment is on page 10, and the way that this language reads is that the lien claimant gets their proceeds, and then everyone else, regardless of their priority, shares on a pro rata basis based on the amount of their lien. Well, here's a real life situation on how that would create unintended consequences. An architect who draws the drawing has a lien that relates back to the very first date his pencil hit the paper drawing the drawing. Sometimes that comes ahead of the bank that loans the money on the lien. And so what happens is the architect gets paid in full the lien, and then the bank is on equal priority even though they have a mortgage with everybody else by virtue of the language in this statute. And so they just share on a pro rata basis. What the amendment does is it allocates the lien on the basis of priority. And then if you're equal priority, and there are some situations where they're equal priority, then it's paid on a pro rata basis. And that's what the amendment on page 10 does. On page 14, this is kind of an interesting departure from Wyoming law. And what it does is it adopts the English rule. What it says is the prevailing party, if you post a bond, and only in the situation if you post a bond, what happens is if you get a lien on the property and you want the lien off of the property, you can post a bond of 1.5 times the amount of the lien so that the property is free and clear. And we want to encourage people to post those bonds because then the money's there to pay off the lien claimants of 1.5 times the amount of the lien, and the property's free and clear, and you can transact with the property. So we want to encourage people to do that. Well, what this says is if you post a bond, the prevailing party in the action shall be entitled to recover all costs and attorney's fees before and after the action was commenced that were reasonably related to the lien. Well, if you post a bond and there's a possibility that that lien claim might be valid, you're not motivated to do that if by posting the bond you also incur attorney's fees that your contract doesn't provide for. So it's a disincentive for posting the bond. And so that's why I took that language out on, or I moved to take that language out on that page. Then on page 19, and this is that preliminary notice stuff that the good chairman talked about, there are nefarious contractors out there, and they don't provide the information to the landowner or to the owner. And so what the amendment on page 19 does is it says a subcontractor or materialman shall not be barred from asserting the lien to this act if the contractor fails to forward to the record owner or his agent a preliminary notice the contractor received from the subcontractor or materialman under this paragraph. So, in other words, if the contractor doesn't tell you who the owner is, you're not foreclosed from your lien. Now, here's the problem, and there are consequences to our actions here. If you're not going to get paid, you're not going to do business with the person who doesn't pay you. And by virtue of this, we remove the ability for contractors to become secured creditors. And that's important because if you're a secured creditor and the debtor files bankruptcy, you have a different position as a secured creditor in bankruptcy than you do as an unsecured creditor in bankruptcy. And you have rights to proceeds that you wouldn't have otherwise. So if you file a lawsuit, you may be able to file a lawsuit as an unsecured creditor, but if that debtor files bankruptcy, you lose the priority of your claim. And so by taking away the right to a lien, you place the materialman primarily at risk. And so if you're Bob Steele Company of Frostbite Falls, Minnesota, and you're supplying steel to someplace in Wyoming, if you're not going to get paid, after the first time you don't get paid, you just don't supply any steel anymore. Now you can say, well, these are great big sophisticated companies. Well, if we make it so hard that people aren't going to do business here, they're just not going to do business here. And so what this amendment does is it says that if the contractor doesn't do the things that the contractor needs to do, and if the materialman or the subcontractor is an innocent party, then they can claim a lien. Now, who do they claim the lien against? Well, we stand here on the shoulders of giants, and there were compromises made before we came to this legislature. And the way our statutes read right now, the only people who get this preliminary notice are homeowners. But the big commercial concerns, the sophisticated purchasers of commercial property, the big builders in this state, the big industrial concerns from my county, who are all sophisticated people, don't have to get that preliminary notice, but the homeowners do. The way that this preliminary notice section is drafted, it means that if you're the big industrial concern and you don't get the preliminary notice, you don't have to deal with the lien either. So in that respect, I believe that the prior law that we had was far superior. This is my attempt at a compromise to make it so that I can swallow the pill. Let's see. The next amendment that I had... I was going to do an amendment at the request of the good chairman of the committee to page 32, line 12, to just delete that. But it was too controversial, and I didn't have the courage to do it, and so I left that amendment out. The next amendment is on page 47. Is that right? And that's just technical compliance because of a section that I delete later on. And that would be the section on page 52, lines 13 and page 53. And what this amendment does is this says if you're not registered to do business with the Secretary of State in the state of Wyoming, on the date the work was performed, you cannot claim a lien. Well, if you're a materialman from Frostbite Falls, you're not registered to do business in the state of Wyoming. You're just shipping out steel. And so what this does is it says if you're not registered with the county clerk or with the Secretary of State, you don't get your lien. You don't even get the opportunity to file a lien. You don't get to talk about it. And I believe that to be unnecessarily restrictive and dangerous, particularly with the cabinet folks that ship cabinets to my community from the hills that are black to the east. So if we want to do a licensing law and we want to require people to be licensed, then this isn't the proper forum to do that. If we want to do a contractor licensing law and put penalties in there for doing that, you don't bury it in the lien statute, you make a licensing law. So I've deleted that language out. And then the last change is on page 53, or page 58. And what happens on page 58 is that before you can file a lien, you have to tell the lien holder that you're going to file a lien on their property. And this says you have to do it 20 days before you file the lien, or almost 3 weeks before you file the lien. The philosophy there was to give people more time to work it out. Well, people haven't paid you your money. You're worried about getting your money. You try and negotiate right up until the last minute. And this just moves that last minute up and forces people, I think, to get into bad positions. And so those are the amendments, and I'm sure that I'll be answering questions for at least the next few minutes. So I will get out of the way and answer questions.
Just a moment. Representative Dan Zwanitzer, would you come up, please? Let's stand at ease for just a moment. He is proposing to divide the amendment, so rather than launch off into Neverland, let's figure out whether we're going to do this. Representative Throne, launch us. All right, well, did you want to divide the amendment? Please proceed.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. My good colleague from Laramie County was just playing messenger and
thank you. I
to
misunderstood
help me.
That.
Mr. Speaker, this amendment obviously brings in lots of different portions of the bill. Some of the items I don't think really go to the heart of the bill, and so I'm proposing that we do those as a division one. And that would be lines 1 through 7, lines 12 through 16, lines 34 to 43 on page 1 through line 2 on page 2.
Are there further divisions?
Yes. And then division 2 would be page 1, lines 8 through 12. Division 3 would be page 1, lines 17 through 33. And division 4 would be lines 3 through 5 on page 2. And, Mr. Speaker, I apologize. That may be slightly different than how it was handed to you.
No, that's fine. The amendment is divisible. Division 1, lines 1 through 7, 12 through 16, 34 through 43, and lines 1 and 2 on page 2 are division 1. Division 2 are lines 8 through 11. Division 3 are lines 17 through 33 on page 1. And page 2, lines 3 through 5 is division 4. How would you like to proceed, Representative Throne?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess I would like to do division 1.
Do you have any objection to Division 1?
No, I have no objections.
Does anyone have any objection to Division 1? We're voting on Division 1 of Second Reading Amendment Number 2. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The Division 1 has passed. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If we could move to Division 2.
Please.
I guess,
and please do.
It's my understanding that this portion of the bill was very important to the parties that worked on it, and wondered if the good sponsor of the amendment could explain his rationale for his proposed amendment on page 10, line 7.
Anyone else for their first time on Division 2? Representative Lebno.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The way the language reads in the bill right now, if I were a banker, I'd be mortified. Because what it does is it takes my priority as a first mortgage holder and it makes it equal with everybody else based upon the amount of my claim, and it's spread pro rata. We have a whole system of priorities of claims and priorities of liens based upon the date of the work, the date of the recording. The way I read the language in the statute, this goofs up that whole priority system. And so what I'm trying to do is put the priorities back in so that it's based on amount if your priorities are equal, but based on priorities like the rest of our law works.
Anyone else for their first time on Division 2? Representative Throne for your second time. Oh, excuse me. Anyone for the second time? Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess I would urge the body to resist this amendment. One of the purposes of the committee that worked on this was to change the priority system. And so let's defeat this for now. I think it may need further discussion. But as far as I know, our friends the bankers like this part of the bill. At least that's what they told me on my way in this morning. So if we could leave this alone for now, that would be my recommendation.
We're voting on Division 2 to second reading amendment number 2. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Division 2 has failed. Division 3.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Division 3 is just a reiteration of the debate we've had on how you protect the rights of the materialmen and the owners in this process. And I think it undoes what we just did in terms of how we balance the various interests involved. So I would urge your defeat of this amendment.
Madam Majority Whip, would you come up, please? Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I urge you to pass this division. Who you're placing at risk are just small businessmen, folks who do business, who work hard every day, who, because of a technicality that we throw into this law, are costing them their ability to get paid. And life is hard enough for us to make absolutely bizarre technicalities that have the potential of putting people out of business is, there are real consequences to this vote right now. And this, I think, is as best a compromise that I can come up with, which is that if the subcontractor, the materialman, doesn't get the name or address of the owner, they're not barred from filing a lien. And so I'd urge you to pass this division. This is important to our businessmen in this state, to our contractors and our subcontractors. And if you don't pass this division, you're putting a lot of people's livelihoods at risk.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and for all of the divisions in second reading amendment number 2. Ladies and gentlemen, we have an expert talking to us right now about liens. In one of the counties in Wyoming that has the most industrial production that you can name, on both sides, industry, consumer, owner, whatever it might be. And I'm sorry I wasn't quick enough on the second division because I'm fairly flabbergasted that we killed that one. But to reorder those priorities like we did and prorate it by the amount of the claim rather than the priority of your claim is really weird. But this one, let's stick with the amendment as it is and on the fourth division too. This bill has some significant issues, and without these changes, just to back up for a second, we've been talking about rewriting the lien statutes for the last decade, and we finally got some effort towards it, and it's really complicated and hard to do. And there were not people jumping at the opportunity to look at the lien statutes. But because of just advances in the way business is done and the age of the lien statutes, they need to be updated. But be careful about how you're influenced about the bill. Listen, I would suggest we listen to our good representative from Campbell County who knows these issues well. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time on Division 3?
for your second time, Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I think we've received a lot of information on this issue and the need to make sure that the owners aren't caught in a double payment situation. So I would urge your defeat of Division 3.
We are voting on Division 3 of Second Reading Amendment Number 2. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Division 3 is passed. Division 4, Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On Division 4, this shortens one of the notice times, and one of the themes throughout this bill is to require longer notice periods. 10 days notice to a property owner is not very much time. I don't think 20 is too much of a burden on the lien claimant, so I think we should go back to the original 20. So I would urge your opposition to this amendment.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I can't stand it anymore. Please support this amendment and understand this. You're an out-of-state person. You're not particularly familiar with doing business in Wyoming. You call an attorney and say, how much time do I have? That attorney has got to be careful. He's got to tell you that you've got, on a general, 120 days, on a material, 90 days, minus however many days this notice is. You've got to do it. So it's 120 less 20, almost, as the bringer of the amendment said, almost 3 weeks. That really shortens down the time. Now, if you miss that first notice period, then you're going to have a defective lien. You're out of luck. So you have to look at it in the greater context. And I don't think that there's no problem with the 10 days. You send the notice 10 days before you have to file. The owner's going to get the notice, then the lien's going to be filed. Pulling it back 20 days, I never understood what they were doing here. It doesn't seem like to me like it helps anybody, and it just lays another trap. It just makes it more and more and more difficult. I wish you didn't have to do these notices at all, because it scares me to death when a client calls me and wants to know about doing one of these liens. And you've got to remember to back that 10 days out. That's bad enough, and 20 is just twice as worse, so twice as bad, so I would urge you to pass this amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Lebno, did you want a first time?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a first time in case I want a second time.
Would you like a second time? Anyone else for their first time? Representative Throne, I will give Representative Lebno the second time since he is the sponsor of the amendment. For your second time, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Nothing new to add. It's a lawyer argument. 10 days is one of the shortest periods we use in the practice of law. It seems a little extreme. 20 is still pretty short in the whole scheme of things, so I would urge your defeat of this division.
Representative Lebno.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What you're talking about here is the last piece of paper that says, you really ought to pay attention to me or I'm going to file a lien on your property. And usually that's 10 days. That's what our existing statutes say. Pay attention to me or I'm going to file a lien on your property. This is the line in the sand. And what we're doing here is we're moving the line in the sand out 3 weeks instead of a week and a half.
We're voting on Division 4 to second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 25. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Second reading, or Division 4 is passed. Division being called. All those in favor of Division 4, please stand. Division 4 is passed. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Excuse me, Representative Throne. Second reading amendment number 2, divisions 1, 3, and 4 have passed. Division 2 failed. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to move second reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 25. And ask for your favorable consideration. This amendment really is a cleanup amendment. And I'm going to have to borrow someone's copy because I left mine at the back of the room. The amendment leaves intact a significant portion of Division 3 that we just passed. It removes Romanet 5 from 21A. 112, which is actually a cleanup that our friends across the hall recommended. But because you passed Division 3, you are still protecting, providing some protection for the subcontractor and the materialman without placing the entire burden and risk on homeowners. And remember, at some point, even though many of the owners are going to be big companies, we're also talking about residential homeowners. The second part of the amendment is just a clarification of the definition of material, because as currently drafted, there was an ambiguity. And I think it's important to note that the primary purpose of adding a definition of material was to ensure that folks would be able to file a lien on the costs of equipment and machinery that they lease for large projects. So this definition is important, but is currently drafted in the bill. It's got like a huge gaping ambiguity, circularity problem. So the purpose of the change of definition of material is not intended to make a substantive change to the bill, just a cleanup change. And I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Representative Throne, tell me, lines 1 through 4 of the amendment, I don't see that. The Lebnow second reading amendment dealt with lines 8 through 11 on page 19.
Mr. Chairman, I think you might have spotted a draft, or Mr. Speaker, you might have spotted a drafting problem.
What is the intent of those lines 1 through 4?
I think the intent of, Mr. Speaker, the intent of lines 1 through 4 of the amendment is to delete 112A5, 29.2.112A5 in the original bill. And so when it deletes the Lubnow amendment lines of second reading amendment number 2, it would delete the Lubnow amendment to line 11, page 19, line 11 of the bill, and leave intact line 21 of the Lubnow amendment. I'm sorry, line.
I'm confused.
Should I try again?
Yeah, please.
The purpose of my amendment, second reading amendment number 3, at lines 2 through 4, is to delete 112A5 in the current bill. And so if you look at the amendment we just dealt with, at line 17, it would delete that language that we just passed, but it would leave intact line 21. So in essence, it represents a compromise.
Okay. So what is it? It's deleting the entire Lebnow second reading amendment on that, which it was division 3 of that amendment, at lines 17 through 24?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
And it does not affect lines 25 through 33 of division 3 of the second reading amendment?
That's the intent, Mr. Speaker, and I think it accomplishes that.
Okay. Representative Stebson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just on and in favor of the amendment, the reason it does that and it makes sense is that the notice that's referred to in that first part of Division 3, this takes out that notice, and so you don't need to excuse the subcontractor or materialman from failing if they don't receive that notice. And so it really does no harm, no foul to Division 3 of the prior amendment we were discussing. It is, in the nature of cleanup, so I would urge an aye vote.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Lebnow.
I would agree with the good representatives from Natrona County and Laramie County and urge you to adopt this amendment. It is in the nature of cleanup.
Anyone else for their first time? For your second time? We're voting on second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 25. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Others opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 3 has passed. Senate File 25, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House stand in recess until 2 p.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House is in recess until 2 p.m. Ladies and gentlemen, at 12:30, from 12:30 to 2 o'clock, there is a reception for Sue Ann Schaefer in the Hersler Building at room B63. B63 at 12:30, reception for Sue Ann Schaefer. Any other announcements? Representative Carson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, President of the Floor.
Please proceed.
I'd like to welcome somebody that moved here from St. Louis to play basketball for the Cowboys, a business owner in the state of Wyoming, number 25, Joe Reese. Let's welcome to the House.
Hey, Joe. Welcome to the House. Good to see you. Any other announcements? The House is in recess until 2 p.m.